and it is time for Bureaucracy Now. I'm Taylor Clark, and I am sitting in this week for Tim Quackenbush, who is in California. And I'm here live in the studio with John Morrow, and it's great to be here live with you, John. We've been doing this on Zoom for a while.
It's been a while, Taylor, to be in live in person with you here. So always sad not to have Tim, but always a really great opportunity for us to catch up.
Yeah.
Thanks for subbing in.
And we have a guest today. We have, I'm going to mispronounce it this time, KT Labadie?
Correct.
Come closer. You're going to have to be much closer to the mic there. How about now?
Can you hear me now?
A little closer, but yes,
closer.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I can talk louder.
Yes. And KT is the code compliance officer for the
City of Port Townsend's Development Services Department.
Development Services Department. I knew there was the planning department is what I was going to call it.
Yeah.
But, we have a couple different topics we're going to talk about, but I wanted to mention one thing. The last time you were here, Tim was going to take phone calls. You remember?
I do.
And you remember that I was actually standing by because I wanted to call.
I think we blocked your number.
No,
I'm kidding.
That's what I want to talk about. That's not what happened. And what happened is we had a problem with the phone system, and the number that we gave out didn't forward to the line here in the studio. And I would actually take calls today, but this is just too much for me to it. It's extreme. I want the listening audience to know that from a standpoint of being a co-host on the show, it's a lot of balls to keep in the air and trying to do phone calls too. I'm just going to apologize right up front. For me, it's just too much today.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Taylor. And I think what people don't know is I get to call myself a co-host and I sit in a chair and I talk. And you've got a board in front of you and all sorts of equipment. And anybody who's been to the KPTC studio knows that it's an awesome community-run station that actually has a lot of moving parts.
There's a lot of moving parts.
Fair call. I would say that anybody who has questions and wants to get in touch directly with me, I always welcome that. I think an email is an easy way to get in the queue.
I just heard this from a community member the other day. They said, you know, if you mail John, John will get back to you.
I will. And I apologize because I probably get sometimes 400 or 500 emails a day. So I don't always get back immediately. And there's a triage element to it. But you could always email me, and I or a member of the team will find a way to get back to you. It's jmauro@cityofpt.us.
Yeah. And I know this, it's the two-way communication on this, I think, is so important, being not just you talking to the community, but the community talking back to you.
We'll do coffee again sometime. I used to meet for coffee every Friday with people.
Well,
who
how Bureaucracy Now got started.
Exactly.
We couldn't meet for coffee anymore.
We'll do that again when we're not in high or moderate or whatever it is with the COVID
situation. Yeah. Okay. Well, should we turn to KT here and have her tell us a little bit about what she does and how it fits with the rest of the city functions?
Yeah, no problem. So I'm the code compliance officer, like we said, in Development Services Department. So I do code compliance for issues such as folks building without a permit, building a fence that is located in the public right of way, issues related to unpermitted short-term rentals, illegal feeding of wildlife, a whole host of issues. There are some things that I don't deal with, such as certain noise complaints, dangerous or barking dogs.
Unlicensed pets.
Yeah, like those things, go to the police department, but, there are a wide variety of issues that we deal with development services related to code compliance.
And now you're new with the department, right? This is a position that we didn't have filled for a long time, right?
Yeah, so we didn't have a code compliance officer probably for about, maybe 8 months before I started. But previous to that, we had a code compliance officer for about, I'd say, 6 years that Katie was here. So Katie was the previous code compliance officer. I am KT, just two letters, a K and a T. So when I came in last August, there was a bit of a backlog of cases just because that hadn't been filled.
Yeah. When you go out, do we have a lot of building without a permit?
Port Townsend, it's a small town, so the number of things we see compared to a place like City of Seattle, for example, you know, we see a
there's
lot
just
less
not
cases.
There's not as much going
there's
on.
There's not as much going
town.
On, yeah. But, you know, we have the same types of things happening here that you would see, you know, in any city.
Mm-hmm. And do you proactively go out and look for things, or are you mostly driven by complaints or concerns or call-ins, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the majority of our code enforcement is related to, we call it citizen concerns. So that's when
there we go.
Or a complaint. So
let's not call it a complaint. Let's call it a concern.
So folks can call in or go online. We have a form that they can fill out and submit a complaint. Mm-hmm. And then with that...
concern.
Yes. So it'll get assigned to the correct staff member. So anything code compliance related will come to me and I'll review it. I'll do some research. I'll often do kind of a drive-by site visit, maybe assess the situation from the public right-of-way, and contact the property owner if need be. You know, so sometimes we get complaints and they are a legitimate complaint. Other times we get complaints and it's not anything that we do code enforcement around. Mm-hmm. But we do sometimes observe things happening. For example, if it's a main road and our building inspector is driving down the street and
he looks over and he sees, say, a huge excavation in the front yard, he might red tag it. That's what happened to me.
Yeah. So for example, if we see someone doing major clearing and grading work,
right.
We're aware there's not a permit there, we will go and stop that type of activity. But we're not driving around on every street on any sort of schedule.
You're not the code compliance
yards.
Police.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
I think that, you know, this is interesting because I think part of it, I like talking about the why and the how here, and I'm excited to have a little bit of time to do that. But backing up a little bit, I think it'd be helpful to remind folks that, you know, of course, the last thing we want to do is go look for trouble. But the first thing we want to do is actually protect human health and safety and the well-being of our community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, without a code compliance officer function, it's really hard to follow up on those things. And I guess I just wanted to invite the conversation about the why so that people can understand, you know, there are issues of equity and fairness, there's issues of health and safety. You know, there's a lot that drives our desire to kind of get that right. And actually, there, you know, code is in the title of KT's role. We also have a code, which is set at the policy level by our city council. So, you know, we're not making stuff up as we go. We're actually trying as a community to hold ourselves to what we've established as what we believe is healthy and safe for everybody.
These are things that we have hopefully discussed and mm-hmm. decided are in the community best interest that we want to one parking place per ADU.
Example. And I think, you know, to that point too, and I'd really invite, you know, KT as the expert here, to talk a little bit about the why, and the rationale for some of this. But, you know, there's a recognition that the code is not perfect.
Right.
And nor is the status of the world or Port Townsend. It's always changing and it's dynamic. And so, you know, we endeavor to change along with the world around us and maybe in advance of it as we see things coming down the pipe. So I just, you know, we can get specifically into what's appropriate for a shed or for a permit approach or for, you know, wildlife feeding or not. But I like to go back to the why.
To the why.
Yeah.
Okay.
So KT, if I can ask as a...
Okay.
Yeah, you're the co-host. what drives that decision making, or what's kind of the background, you know, purpose of code compliance in your perspective?
Yeah. So it probably depends on the type of code that is being enforced. For example, building code. If someone's doing something without a permit, especially if it's something structural, there could be a major safety concern there. So we want to make sure that whatever work you're doing has been permitted, it's been inspected and reviewed by folks who are experts in figuring out, okay, has this been built to code? Is this going to be a safe structure? And, you know, sometimes we'll even hear of cases of someone, not something that's being built, but an existing structure that looks unsafe, like a garage that's maybe slightly tilted towards someone's home. So sometimes it's not even just the construction of something
safety. It's the maintenance of it.
Yeah. So that is something that we follow up on as well, determining if a structure is deemed unsafe. And, you know, there's also the... like our nuisance code, for example, that really fits into the livability and just the kind of quality of life aspect of Port Townsend, and also some health and safety in there. So, for example, you know, you can have chickens in Port Townsend. You can
I hear them all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can also have a rooster.
Uh-huh.
If the rooster makes noise.
That's the one I hear.
Yeah, and your neighbors complain about it, then we can do code enforcement to require you to get rid of the rooster. But if no one's complaining about it, it's fine according to our code. And how, like, the nuisance comes in with, like, livestock, for example, is if you have someone who has livestock in their yard, they're building up piles of manure or animal feed that's causing rats. That situation, if it gets out of control, can create, you know, some health concerns. So it really depends on the specific situation. But I really feel like a lot of times it comes down to health and safety. It comes down to livability, and, you know, a lot of things that many people in the community value.
When you contact somebody, I'm first of all, you're doing a job I could not do.
Because, I hear that a lot.
Because I hate confrontation, you know. And you don't strike me as a terribly confrontational person yourself.
No.
But how do you find that is there confrontation involved in this? How do you handle that?
You know, there can be. I have to say, folks in Port Townsend are just so nice.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
So even when I am, you know, talking to a property owner who, you know, has some sort of code violation, the majority of the time it's, you know, a positive experience. But, you know, just given the nature of my job going into it, I'm always approaching the situation of trying to make people, you know, not react negatively to the situation, to come at it from an education standpoint, not pointing fingers and blame. You know, no one responds well to that, and it's not necessary.
So the wheels do turn in your head on how do I make this the most positive experience that we can have a good outcome.
Yeah.
So we get the compliance we need, but we don't get people irate or upset.
If you approach the situation from a very aggressive standpoint, you're going to get people reacting that way. But I do not subscribe to that. But, you know, that said, even if I'm approaching the situation in a very friendly manner, trying to educate people, it can be a very emotional experience for people because maybe they've spent a lot of money on this project and now we're telling them they need to do something different. I get it. I would probably react the same way. And I always try to keep that in mind when I'm interacting with people and try to give people some space to, you know, just process what it is that the city is requiring of them, to try in any way possible to make the process easier for them.
I was going to say, does the city have some flexibility in terms of deadlines or, you know, I mean, we don't say you got to get this out of the public right away next week.
Yeah. So for life safety issues, like,
that's different.
Like, oh, you have a house with tenants in it. The deck looks like it's about to fall off. You know, that's something we need something addressed right away, whether it's, you know, blocking that area off or doing some other sort of measure. But a lot of things, if that shed sits in the right of way for, you know, a month, it's not a huge deal. If we need that shed to move because we're trying to put a utility line through there next week, that's a different scenario. So, you know, we can offer flexibility with deadlines. We do like to see that people are committed to you know, making the change that is required to bring their property into compliance, that they're communicating with us and just letting us know if they do face some sort of hiccup on getting something done, whether it's a health issue that pops up, they have to travel unexpectedly, like things happen in people's lives. I'm not going to start fining people because they need more time to do something, especially if they're really showing that they're trying.
I guess we go back to the why is, mm-hmm. is we don't fine people just for the, just, what we really want is to get the change made.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. And you want to get, that's the second part of this. It's the compliance. You want to get the compliance. You're not the code police.
There's a long game here too. And I think that's what I really respect and appreciate about KT's approach is that, you know, there's relationships here. There's common ground, there's emotionality to it and mm-hmm. passion. I mean, you know, just to kind of take that big picture approach and think, how do we move the ball forward on any one issue and as a community so that, you know, ideally we have fewer and fewer cases because, you know, we're clear about what the rules are and how to go about the right process. Community understands where to get the information. We're not always good at that. I mean, I'm holding in my hand a great brochure that KT developed about code compliance.
And so, I haven't had a chance. Yeah. I just saw it myself.
So how do we actually front foot this in a way so people understand before they're right in the middle of making maybe the wrong decision about where to place a fence or whatever it might be? And it prevents all that frustration. And, you know, I hate to get kind of metaphysical about it, but, you know, it kind of is like we're a community and we look after each other. KT plays a big role in that. And the approach of how to bring us all into that kind of common agreed space of what the code is. It isn't punitive. It isn't shame based. We're on a journey in partnership together.
Yeah. I'm thinking as a homeowner, and a member of the public, what could I do? I guess the question is, how do I know what I need to do? How do I know that I'm doing something that's gonna get her out and looking? How do I avoid that? I guess is you know, I'm thinking you've mentioned fences, you've mentioned sheds, you've mentioned feeding the deer. You know, clearly I need to keep my rooster quiet.
Yeah.
I guess is there some sort of easy rule of thumb or some way people could know what the requirements are? I guess we could start with sheds. Is there a size of shed I can build under which I don't need a permit?
Yeah, so a shed that's 200 square feet or less,
is a pretty big shed.
It's a big shed. You mm-hmm. don't need a permit. But one of the things that I like to point out to people is code is very complicated, and often you don't find the answer in one spot. So mm-hmm. for a shed, for example, on our website, we do have a handout about structures that are exempt from building permits.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to read the whole thing, because if you just read the section that says, okay, the size, all right, my structure is less than 200 square feet, I'm good, you might miss the part further down that says...
About setback?
Yeah, you have to meet the setback from the property line.
Yeah.
So depending on where the shed is located, if it's a side yard or backyard setback, you know, it could be 5 feet, 10 feet, it depends on your zoning.
Mm-hmm.
So call us... Ask us questions, tell us your address, we'll look it up. We can look at your zoning and tell you what your setback would be. And then we can also provide you with a link to our online map where you can look up your own property boundary. It's an estimated property boundary, but it's, you know, relatively accurate. You know, nothing like a survey. You could always get a survey done, but we don't expect people to get a survey every time they're, you know, putting something in their yard.
So let me just ask right up front, because I think this is the concern I'm thinking about doing something and I call up, you know, the city. It's like, hello, city. You know, this is Mr. Smith on fictitious address, because I don't actually want you to know who I am. Is there anything about calling the city that is going to, you know, am I outing myself? You know, or is it something that I can do with relative anonymity? I mean,
yeah.
I'm not saying it very clearly, but I guess I want to know. Do I get on a list when I call the city that then, you know, you're going to show up and say, hey, your shed's in the wrong place?
Yeah, so we're too busy to keep a list like that.
Good.
but if you're, you know, for example, emailing us and saying, here's what I want to do. I have lots of questions about my project. And we give you the information you need. And then you choose to not follow that. You mm-hmm. know, we might remember, oh, wait, we emailed with this person 9 months ago. So, you know, there's always that risk there that mm-hmm. you could out yourself. But, you know, our goal is to just provide people with the information they need. Occasionally we get folks who won't provide their address, and there's just some questions that
you can't answer when you don't
answer
because you don't know their zoning, you don't know the lot size, you don't know who's around it. There's all you don't know the context.
Same thing with citizen concerns of any kind, even if you're reporting a pothole or a deer or whatever it might be, which you can do on our website, on our homepage. There's a button at the very bottom of the front page. You know, we request that information not to follow up with people and to keep a list because we, you know, honest answer, don't have one. But, you know, we do have a variety of questions like, you know, where specifically is such deer or pothole?
Yeah.
Or if it's, you know, you've got a water leak or a sewer issue, you know, we might need to contact somebody to make sure that we follow up in the right location. So, you know, that's not meant to be punitive. It's meant to make sure we have a full picture of the situation.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention too, with the shed example of it's not just the square footage, there's setback requirements. Something that other people don't realize is we have critical areas in Port Townsend. So that could be a wetland, it could be a steep slope, you know, habitat for blue heron. Like there's a lot of mm-hmm. critical areas. And if you don't have critical area on your property, or a neighboring property, you know, that's not something you have to worry about, but you might want to build your shed. You might have it, you know, far enough in from the property line, meet that setback.
But not far enough to meet the critical areas ordinance.
But you may have, you might have a critical area concern. So again, just if you have a project, especially if you haven't reached out to the city before to find out about, oh, here's where my estimated property line is. Here's my zoning. Okay, I don't have critical areas according to the city. If you haven't gotten that information before putting up a fence, building a shed, you know, any sort of project, just reach out to us and we're happy to provide that information to you.
Ah, and is that on the back of the...
My direct phone number is 360-379-5094. And my email address is klabadie, LABADIE, at cityofpt.us.
So it sounds like we're really encouraging people who are thinking about doing things to make a non-binding, low-risk call to the city and saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Can you give me a hand on what might be the requirements?
I think in the grand scheme, that is the why that we're talking about.
That's the
why. In terms of
yeah.
partnership and trying yeah. to get the right outcomes. And frankly, it'll save us and you a lot of time on many occasions. If you measure twice, cut once kind of thing, when in doubt, it allows you to be a little bit more
exactly
confident.
That, exactly that example. Yeah. Rather than cut the board an inch short
yeah.
and then have to buy a new board, let's check it out ahead of time
exactly.
and get it right. Okay.
Exactly.
That's yeah. it. Avoid a lot of heartache, too. Mm. I definitely see that with a lot of these cases.
I think that's a good take-home message in some ways.
Okay. Yeah. Avoid the heartache. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Taylor, if you've got time to delve into.
Absolutely have.
Another.
I know the next DJ really well.
Great. So do I. One of the things I wanted to make sure we touched on, too, especially when the KT is here, is something I just had a conversation about with a city council member just before buzzing over here. And that's short-term vacation rentals because, like, tis the season.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of mixes up.
You're right, it was on the list here.
A whole host of things, including, you know, housing supply and constraints and that kind of thing. But just to be explicitly clear, we wanted to spend a little bit of time because that's actually something that's of a high concern, and we do get complaints about
that.
Well,
I know we passed a short-term housing ordinance 2-3 years ago.
It was just before I got here.
Yeah.
So maybe we could explain what that is and what 29 days means. And, you know, KT can kind of spend a little bit of time explaining.
Well, I'm going to take a shot at the why on this. We don't want our housing stock to be used up by people getting short-term rentals and then not be able to rent that to somebody who, you know, for say workforce housing,
yeah,
for example. That was the why of, that's why they did it.
That when I rolled the tapes and I tried to understand the policy decision that city council made, yeah, before I arrived, it was very much what you just described. Yeah. It was that, you know, we prioritize people who live
here. I've observed here, those city council, yeah, meetings too.
Yeah. And work here. And actually, yeah, it'd be, yeah, great if people had the opportunity to rent it out for $250 a night. But actually, there's a priority given to those who live and work in our community, and there's a shortage of supply. So that was the intent policy-wise.
Okay. And then if you want to do a short-term rental, it's under 29 days, right, KT?
Yeah, so 29 days and less, you're considered short-term rental. So if you want to avoid the short-term rental rules and regulations, you have to rent for 30 days or more.
Or more. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you want to do a short-term rental, now you have extra, there's extra hoops you need to jump through.
Yeah,
right?
there is a bit of a process. So you have to fill out an application. You have to provide a site plan. It involves the building inspector going with one of our planning staff and doing an actual inspection of your property. They're checking for some basic life safety situations, but also checking to see that you, as the owner of that home, live there, and you will have your own designated bedroom, and you're renting out a specific part of your home.
This is one of the requirements of the ordinance, was we're not allowing absentee landlords, right, for short term.
Yeah, so the idea is that if you're doing a short term rental, you are present, mm-hmm, when the rental is happening.
Oh,
so
okay,
whoever you're doing the vacation home for, that, you know, you have to be there during that time. And this allows us to avoid the situation where, you know, folks are just renting out homes, they're not present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, securing that workforce housing. But it also allows the opportunity for folks, you know, especially as housing prices increase, that they can, you know, make some additional money to help cover their mortgage, mm-hmm, by doing a short-term rental. Mm-hmm. So it really is a benefit to the community in many ways.
Either way, mm-hmm, either long, I mean, because clearly you can bring in some money by renting your ADU in a long-term thing, but this allows people maybe to rent a guest room in their house,
yeah,
where they might not want to do that long-term, but they might be willing to do it for a couple weekends.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that you can't do a short-term rental in an ADU. So if you have like a detached ADU behind your home, or one that is enclosed in the main envelope of your home, if it has, you know, all separate facilities, its own kitchen, according to our code, you can't do that as a short-term rental.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. That was new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when you go through this, you talked about the process and filling out an application. Is this amount to a permit to do short-term rentals? Is that what it comes down to?
Yeah. So you get a permit to do it. You have to have a business license. So then you'll have, mm-hmm, on any listing that you do online or printed advertisement for your rental, you would have to have that license number on there.
Okay. And that's supposed to be the way you can tell that it's a permitted one. You look for the license number on the advertisement, on the Airbnb listing,
correct,
for example.
And I do check those about once per month for
good,
anyone who's listening.
And that was actually, I'm sure, that was mentioned in the city council where they discussed this. That certainly in the planning commission, I think, is where it was discussed. And that was the intention, was that it allowed the compliance officer to tell if this was being followed.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good information.
And there's so much here. I would encourage people to look on our website or give KT a call with those questions. But also, this brochure is great because it kind of talks through the common code violations, so things to be watchful for, the common, you know, avoiding some of those common violations, how to report them, and then just a general FAQ about, you know, issues that are covered or not covered. And of course, KT's contact information and also agencies that are responsible for things that are outside of our direct responsibility as a city.
Yeah. The brochure available on the website too?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I think we're just about out of time. I want to thank KT Labadie, who is the code compliance officer for the, and then I blew it again,
development services department.
And I want to thank John Morrow, Port Townsend city manager, and my dog Sage, who has been unable to lie down for the entire show.
Sage has done really well here. Yeah. I just need to tell all listeners. So thank you, Sage.
Yeah, he's been a good dog. All right. So I think
thanks,
we're going to go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.